I got my letter in the mail today from PS&H. I'll read it to you. Dear Mr. Baker, as your meter readers have to walk through deep snow and climb over banks daily during winter months, it is a pleasure to find someone like yourself who has cleared a path to the meters. I love my meter reader. He's a good guy. There's a lot of great PS&H employees out there, and I'm happy to help them out in any way I can. This isn't about the folks working for PS&H. I'm also a former Canadian. I learned to play hockey in Montreal. And I love my relatives who remain in Canada. I love the kids who are now a little bit older that I played hockey with. And I love Canadians. I especially like those in Quebec. So don't take any of my remarks tonight as disparaging the good folks in Quebec. And they are good. And they're great neighbors. And we should be very happy that we have them. But not so much Hydro-Quebec. I'll talk just a little bit about the legal relationship of the parties that are involved in this so you can understand and follow the money. Who are the parties that are doing this to the state of New Hampshire, from stem to stern, from Canada to Massachusetts? They call themselves Northern Pass. Northern Pass is a limited liability company formed under New Hampshire law by Northeast Utilities, at least a subsidiary of Northeast Utilities, which is headquartered in Hartford, Connecticut, where I practiced law for almost 30 years, and NSTAR, which is a Massachusetts public company, utility company, and it's headquartered just outside Boston. Those are the folks who are going to make money. Who are they dealing with? They're dealing with Hydro-Quebec. What's Hydro-Quebec? Hydro-Quebec is a crown corporation of the province of Quebec. It's owned by the provincial government, the politicians. What does it do? It supplies power to all of the residents of Quebec. It has a monopoly in Quebec. What's it want to do? It wants to sell power outside the province of Quebec because it makes more money selling that power outside the province of Quebec because it's not regulated outside the province of Quebec the way it is inside the province of Quebec. The people in Quebec get power for less money than those who buy it who are outside the province of Quebec. And that's proven in the financial statements of Hydro-Quebec for the last year that they're available, 2009. In those financial statements, it says that approximately 10% of the power sales of Hydro-Quebec are outside the province. It also says that 30% of Hydro-Quebec's profits come from that 10% of the sales that are outside the province of Quebec. I don't have the gross numbers, but you don't have to have them to do the math. It's very simple. People who buy power outside the province of Quebec are, in effect, subsidizing the ratepayers in Quebec. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with the desire to do that, but we need to understand when we start looking at what's the public benefit to New Hampshire or indeed New England of this thing, where we are being asked to subsidize ratepayers in not just in another state, in another country, in a foreign country. And Canada is a great neighbor, but it's a foreign country. This hydropower that will come down from Quebec onto this proposed line and into southern New England is sending electrons south, and it's foreign power. We're sending those electrons south from a foreign country. And what are we doing with our U.S. dollars? North, offshore, to a foreign country. Now, I know it's not literally offshore, but it may as well be. Those dollars are gone. They're gone into the pockets up there. Where are the jobs from hydropower? The jobs from hydropower, the permanent jobs, are in Quebec, where they generate the power. There's no jobs on a power line that just sends the electrons south. They go all by themselves. They go wherever the demand is. There might be one guy in a truck driving up and down the line to make sure it's still there. But that's it.
We'll tell them it's there.
So those are the legal relationships that we're looking at. Now, things are changing. They're changing all the time. These people have a plan, but the plan sometimes has to get altered. One of the things that really wrecked their day in Canada was the fact that natural gas prices went through the floor. And all of a sudden, 2 cents a kilowatt hour doesn't seem like a lot of money. Maybe it's not even worth it. Last December, they filed, I think it was on the 16th of December, the transmission service agreement between Northern Pass and a company that Hydro-Québec formed as a Delaware corporation with the name, it's a cute name, HQ Hydro Renewable Corp. They like the hydro, they like the renewable, not so much the word Quebec. So it's HQ Hydro Renewable. It's a Delaware corporation, it's a U.S. corporation, but believe me, the shareholders, 100%, are the province of Quebec. They own it. So let's follow the money. What's in it for Northern Pass? Well, Northern Pass, this LLC, which has it's just a name, it doesn't really have any employees. It's got a board of directors composed of senior officers from Northeast Utilities and NSTAR. But Northern Pass is going to do what? It's going to be the owner of the transmission line. And it's going to try to become a public utility in New Hampshire to be the owner of this transmission line. And it's going to want to use what? If somebody perhaps doesn't want to sell their property, doesn't want to deal with them, what's it going to use to get the property away from a intransigent landowner in New Hampshire? It's going to use the law of eminent domain. It's the only way it'll work. So Northern Pass will tell you, well, we're a New Hampshire limited liability company. But let's examine that. Let's follow the money. Northern Pass will own the transmission line, and under this agreement that it's filed with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission seeking approval for it, it will get guaranteed payments over the life of the agreement that will pay it back every penny that it invests in this project, plus 12.5% return on equity. Now, when you go to the bank and put $1,000 CD, how much do you get return on your equity from the bank? If you're lucky, 1%. This baby's going to bring in 12.5 times that. And just in case that HQ Hydro Renewable doesn't have the money to pay for that transmission service, guess who's guaranteed those payments? Hydro-Québec. That's where the money's coming from that's going to pay for this whole thing. They'll tell you that they're going to own the line and that they have capital at risk and there's a few things that might go wrong. Well, yeah, I hope there's a few things that go wrong. But who's paying for it? Hydro-Québec. I'll give you another example. Buried in the middle of this paper, there was 700 pages filed with FERC, is a little agreement, a letter agreement. It's about 8 pages long compared to the 700 that are involved with the rest of this. In that 8 pages of the development agreement, Hydro-Quebec agrees to pay for all the development costs that have been incurred in the Northern Pass project since March of 2009, up until March of 2011, to the tune of $16 million. Now, maybe they haven't spent 16 yet, but the projection is by the time we get to March of this year, it'll be $16 million. And what's that $16 million for? It's for the fancy website they put up. It's for the visits that they have up here to tell you nice folks about how this is going to be really good for your economy. It's for the land agents that are walking around right now trying to sell you a bill of goods called the Right of Entry Agreement. $25,000 for the Snowdio so they can put out a false news story about how 1,000 snowmobilers in the North Country think this is a hot damn idea. Well, that sort of backfired on them. And we're hoping to have a lot more backfire on them. Meanwhile, I don't know, Dave, how much did that sign cost you? Let me tell you something, Dave. You got more mileage out of that sign, dollar for dollar, than they got out of $16 million.
Thank my wife, too.
Right. So when people come knocking on your door, if you're a landowner, and by the way, let me do this right now. How many of you are landowners that are on this line and you know it? How many of you have gotten letters asking you to sign right of entry agreements? I won't ask you whether you did or not, but...
Just out of coincidence, I think I got mine today.
Yeah.
And I'm seriously thinking about just throwing the whole packet right in the wood stove.
Hang on to it. Hang on to it.
Okay.
We'll frame it.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to talk about these right of entry agreements, because that's what's out there right now. And then we'll talk about a few things beyond that. But keep in mind that these right of entry agreements were drafted by really smart lawyers. And they're devastatingly simple. They've only got a few provisions. It says, and I won't get it quite right, for $400, you can have the right to watch us walk across your land for 3 years anytime we want. Now, they'll tell you it's only two or three or maybe four visits, but the agreement doesn't say that. The agreement says our agents and contractors can go on your property for the next 3 years until December of 2013. To do what? Survey? Wildlife inspections, go look at the animal tracks, see what runs when we yell, I don't know, see what hops into the net. Wetlands, you got any wetlands? They'll tell you where they are and where they aren't. They'll have wetlands experts go out. What else will they do? They'll look around to see where it might be a good spot to put a structure. You know what a structure is? Yeah, somewhere between 9 and 13 stories of structure on your land. And they're going to want to do what? Once they decide where a good structure could go, they're going to come in with a drill and they're going to bore a core. But they can't do that until they pay you another $400 under that agreement. So you might make $800. But guess what? If you decide in the middle of the deal, I don't want them boring on my land, and I sure as heck don't want a structure where they're putting it, you can't legally tell them, go away. Once you sign that agreement, you're stuck. They can enforce it in court. They can get an order requiring you to obey. Now, they'll tell you we'd never do that. Watch them. I'm telling you right now, not as a legal matter, because I can't give anybody any particular legal advice, because I don't know your facts and circumstances and what you want to do. But from my perspective, I wouldn't sign the agreement for a whole bunch of reasons, the most important one of which doesn't have anything to do with the law. It has to do with human nature. I don't want them to think that I like this one bit. It's not worth $400 to me, it's not worth $800 to me, and it's just going to be something that won't happen. That's one reason. Number two, as a matter of legal liability, you might want to ask, okay, all right, it's just a little piece of land, it's all in current use, and there's only trees on it, what the hell, it can't hurt. So maybe I'll sign it. Well, ask yourself, do you have an insurance policy on that land? What happens if they get hurt? Somebody falls, somebody trips over a old barbed wire and has a cut, and they get infected, and they go to the hospital. Who's responsible? That devastatingly simple little right of entry agreement doesn't have one provision in it as to what happens if someone gets hurt. Who's responsible, you or them? In the legal profession, we would require that there be an indemnity agreement indemnifying the landowner from all loss, cost, expense, attorney's fees, or any other problem you might have if somebody gets hurt or injured on that property, whether or not it's due to their fault. If it's one of their agents or they caused it, you want them to pay. It's not in there. What else isn't in there? Notice. They'll tell you, oh, we'll call you. By the way, who's seen Tommy True on the video? I think his name is Tom True. Yeah. There's a video up of this nice man who says, we will always give you 2 to 3 weeks notice. Well, then why isn't that in the agreement? You should at least be notified under this agreement when they're coming. Tom doesn't talk about it, but it might also be nice to know who's coming. Whose agent is it? Is this the wetlands guy? Is this the surveyor? Is this someone else? Who are they working for? Are they working for Normando? Anybody heard the name Normando before? Normando is the environmental expert that has been hired by Northern Pass to come in and see if this line can be built across the state. They advertise themselves as experts in this type of work. They advertise themselves as fulfilling their clients' needs. We're really good at filling our clients' needs. Well, guess who else Normando is working for? The Department of Energy. The Department of Energy, who's going to do the environmental impact study, has signed a memorandum of understanding with Normando and Northern Pass, under which Normando has agreed we'll divide ourselves into three different groups. One will be data collectors, one will work for the government on the environmental impact study, and one will work for Northern Pass so that they can get ready to testify as experts on behalf of Northern Pass before the New Hampshire Site Evaluation Committee. So they're going to trifurcate themselves into this little group, but under this agreement, Northern Pass gets to do a few things. One, it gets to direct the activities of Normando, whether it's on behalf of themselves or the government. Now they'll tell you, oh, we can't do that. The government will ensure that this is a fair process. Well, you know what? It might be. But it stinks. It smacks of conflict. You'll be letting those people on your property, and you won't know whether they're working for the government or Normando or Northern Pass, unless you ask. Maybe you want your own expert. If you're thinking about having them come, maybe you have your own people come in and look at the land. Maybe they're going to find wetlands where Normando doesn't. It's supposed to be an objective measure, but we all know that wetlands can be different things to different folks at different times. And if an engineer says it's wetlands, it's going to be wetlands. That's it. unless you've got another one who says it isn't. So I'll get to you in a second, sir, because I'm wound up now. So here's your problem. You're going to let people on your land. You don't really know who they're working for, and maybe they're working for two masters. But we know one damn thing for sure. They aren't working for you. And it's your land. And you don't have to let them on until somebody hands you a court order. And that won't happen for a long, long time. Maybe two, maybe 3 years before they could be in a position to require it. And there are laws in New Hampshire where they could require it. Don't let me leave you with the impression that it will never happen. But you don't have to agree. And you don't have to agree now. And they don't have any permits for this project. They've got to get a permit from FERC. They've got to get a permit from the Department of Energy. They've got to get a permit from the Site Evaluation Committee. They're going to have to get permission from the Forest Service. They're going to have to get permission from, if I'm reading the papers right, the federal, what is it? Yep, they've also got to get Secretary of State and Department of Defense. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Thank you. That's what I was trying to think of before. There's all kinds of permits they're going to need. Now, it doesn't matter, though, for our purposes. Time is really, really short now. And the folks that have told you about writing to political office holders, it's absolutely true. You've got to get it done now. The chance to form legislation, such as Representative Rappaport has spoken of, so important. We've got to get the word out, and we've got to have it spread. Now, it is spreading. Tom Mullen came up from Campton. He's halfway down the state. Folks are waking up in Concord. There's a lawyer down there representing a group of homeowners and landowners to the east of the city that are going to have a new line built through their property if the FAA says you can't put towers next to the airport. So there's a lot of things happening, and we're not alone. The Nature Conservancy wrote a letter to the DOE. We're opposed. Six wonderful reasons why. The Forest Society has come out against this project, and that's all happened in the last 2 months. The Ammonoosuc Trust is against it. The Conservation Law Foundation is going to be helpful in this. I believe that we're going to get some help from them. It's just starting. And the Appalachian Mountain Club, very important group of wealthy folks from Boston. A lot of them, anyway. That's the Forest Society, yes. Oh, okay. The real name of the Forest Society is the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests. I think that's it. Great group. They're wonderful to work with, and they're very helpful. If you ever have a question about this, write down there. They will be very happy to answer it, I know. So there's a lot of folks working with this, but let me get back to your legal rights. These right of entry agreements are not good things. I don't recommend it. If you came to me and you said, look, I'd like to get some money for it, keep in mind something else. A guy with 2 acres of land is getting $400 for signing it and $400 more if they want to come in and drill. A guy with 2,000 acres is getting the same damn right of entry agreement with the $400 offer. Well, if I'm doing the math right, the $400 for 10 acres is worth, let's say it's 1,000 acres, 100 times more. Did I do the math right? So 100 times 400 is what? I mean, who says you have to take 400? If you really think this is a good plan, take them for all you're worth. Make it cost more. Make them go through the $16 million right away. In any event, you have the right to do that too. So whatever your desire is, don't just sign the piece of paper. Make them work for it. make them pay for it if you have to. But my best advice as someone who's opposed to this, not as a lawyer, but my advice to you as someone who's opposed to it, is don't sign. Let them know there's big trouble in Coos County. The landowners aren't feeling real good about this, and we're going to fight it. God forbid it comes to this, but someday we might have to face eminent domain. If the legislative fixes don't work, if they get all the permits, someday they're going to come knocking on your door, and I hope it doesn't happen, and they're going to say, we'd like to talk to you about our right-of-way across your land and how much it'll take to get it, to get you to sign our right-of-way agreement or an option agreement. Get a lawyer right away. Don't try to dicker with them. Don't try to talk with them, because the moment you open your mouth, they're going to assess where you are. They're going to be making calculations about how easy you are. Tell them politely. There's no need for anything other than polite language. See my damn lawyer. I don't want to be that lawyer. I'm retired. I will help you find a lawyer. I promise you, I will help you find a lawyer. I mean, I used to be retired. But tell them that it will be worth it. It will be worth it. All of a sudden, they go running back and they'll say, they've got a lawyer. That means they put another zero on what they were going to offer you, or they double the number in front. Whatever it is, there'll be math that they'll be doing. Make them do that math. Hang on, Dave. We'll get there.
Mark.
I'm sorry, Mark.
No problem, Dave.
I've been called worse. If you have the misfortune of having that knock, and you get your lawyer, and the lawyer negotiates with them and says, well, all right, we understand that you may someday have the right to eminent domain here, and the lawyer tries to get you money and is unsuccessful, and they go to the last resort, which is eminent domain. That's what I'd like to talk about for a minute. The way the statutory procedure in New Hampshire works today is it's all done initially at the Public Utilities Commission under a set of statutes that start with the number 371, RSA 371. There's a whole panoply of provisions there, and I'll just summarize them briefly for you. There are two things that they have to show to the Public Utilities Commission in their complaint and in the evidence. One is the necessity, the public necessity for the project. We've already heard tonight a lot of mileage could be made on that. Is this really a public necessity in New Hampshire, where we have more power than we use, where none of this benefit is going to come to the state, really? Although I'm sure they'll be working on ways to convince us otherwise. But that necessity issue is big, because we have another provision in the laws of New Hampshire that has to be read alongside that, and that is in our Constitutional Bill of Rights. Article 12A, enacted by the voters of New Hampshire less than 5 years ago in reaction to a case that came from Connecticut, where I used to practice law. Actually, I still practice down there. I'm licensed there, too. New London versus Kelo. Great case, went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court said, okay, the city of New London wants to take this little homeowner's property for use as a development for Pfizer to build its new headquarters in New London. Private company. But because there would be a tremendous increase in the tax base of the city and other indirect benefits will allow the use of eminent domain under the federal constitution, And as long as fair value is paid for that property, the constitutional requirements of the federal constitution will be fulfilled. Voters all over the country reacted badly to that, and many, many states enacted either statutory provisions or constitutional provisions to try to erase that law from the land of the jurisdiction involved. And New Hampshire did that. It erased Kelo versus New London with Article 12A. Article 12A says, and I'm going to do the best I can to summarize it, I won't get it quite right. It basically says that private property cannot be directly or indirectly taken for private uses. So even if there is some indirect public benefit under this provision, the intent was that private uses, primarily private uses, would not allow eminent domain to be used. So you've got a wonderful issue you can throw at the Public Utilities Commission right away in the eminent domain proceeding, and that is, I've got rights under Article 12A, you're violating my rights under Article 12A, and there is no necessity for this damn line. We are an exporter of power from New Hampshire, and the public necessity that we want to talk about is public need and necessity in New Hampshire, not in New England, and certainly not in Canada.
Possibility the Northern Pass may take on the status of a public utility?
They're going to try. They've already said they will. They are before FERC right now with this agreement, and once they get this agreement, it's called, they'll have a tariff permit. They'll be just like any other owner of a transmission line in the United States trying to build it. So they're going to try to become public utility. I don't know what's going to happen, but we sure as heck can let our Public Utilities Commission know how we feel about it. I'm not saying that they're going to politicize it. They're going to look at it carefully. They're intelligent people. I don't know how they'll react, but they're going to try.
Can a company, a public utility that is partnered with a Massachusetts and a Canadian organization be considered a New Hampshire public utility?
That's a great question for Commissioner Getz. I'm not the one that's going to answer that for you. I know how I would personally argue that matter. I would say, hell no. But I'm not the one that's going to decide that. But these are all very important questions for us to focus on, those of us in the opposition and those of you out there who want to help. You got to write these letters. Eminent domain, I'm not done with that. So you got the Constitution, you got Article 12A, you got something else at the public utilities that they have to show, and that is the amount of damages that they want to pay. They'll come in, they'll really have, essentially have a check. They'll say, okay, I've taken Mark's land, and we're ready to pay him $12.22, the check's right here. Mark says, $12.22? Hell no, my land's worth $12,222. And the damages is very, very important. Peter Powell talked about it. What are the damages? The damages aren't just the right-of-way that they want to take. They'll tell you that that's worth so much an acre and we'll pay you that, even though you're keeping almost the entire right to it. All you have to do is let us have these towers and lines over it. The damages that will be computed will be for the entire parcel of land that is affected by the taking. Now, you may have multiple lots. If one lot isn't involved, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the one where the power line's going to cross it. The damage is the value of that lot before the power line went up, less the value after the power line goes up. Is that essentially it? I think that's right. So if your lot was worth $22,000 before the power line went up, and it's now worth $12,000 or $2,000, it's the difference. It's not the acreage value of what's under that power line or in the right-of-way. You have a right to have that heard at the Public Utilities Commission. If you disagree with the Public Utilities Commission determination of value, you have a right to take it to court. And in court, you have a right to a jury trial, a jury of your peers. Now, you need to talk to a lawyer about what that means, because it's expensive, but it could mean a whole bunch when you've got a major parcel involved. It could mean a whole bunch if you've got a house on that land, which I'll come back to in a second. It could mean a whole bunch if this is what you wanted your kids to go to college on. So this is about as big as it gets. If you're going to have a power line over your land, you want to be prepared, and you want that legal advice right up front if they come knocking on your door for the land. So again, get a lawyer. If you own a house that you reside in on a parcel that is being taken for eminent domain, there are some time limitations that you're going to have to follow and be careful of under the statute. But you have the right to put the whole thing for sale to the power company. They got to buy the whole thing, lock, stock, and barrel, house included, if that's what you want, if you want to move. They even have, I think, an obligation to pay your moving expense. So there's a lot of things that you need to be aware of, and depending on your individual circumstances, if push comes to shove, and I hope we never get there, but if push comes to shove, you've got some rights even then. The issue of public necessity is a real problem under this statute. It doesn't allow you to take that to court. If the PUC commission decides that there is public necessity and we'll let we'll let the fight go on over value, they can get a deed to the right of way recorded on the land records almost instantly under this statute. I don't know what other lawyers think of that, but I think in light of Article 12A and in light of the facts of this case, that might be unconstitutional not to let you go to court to argue over that.
What court does the eminent domain get appealed to? Is that the Superior Court of New Hampshire?
Yes, I believe that's right. Now, I'm not a procedural expert under New Hampshire law.
I call it Superior Court.
Under those circumstances, it could be taken directly to the Supreme Court if one wanted to file an appeal.
Well, no, the first appeal would be to the Superior Court from the PUC. It'd be an administrative appeal of the damages, but you get a jury, and if you don't like what the Superior Court does, under normal court procedure, you'd have the right to appeal that up to the Supreme Court.
That's what I was saying. Once it goes to the Supreme Court, then you
Right, Superior Court to the Supreme Court. Yes, so you can spend a lot of time in court. The concern that I have is, under this statute, the public utility, if it's a public utility, is going to record the order of the PUC, and you're going to see those towers go up while you appeal, unless you can get a stay. And the statutory structure, this statute, by the way, made sense at the time it was enacted. It was before Kelo versus New London. It was back when public utilities were all regulated by the state of New Hampshire PUC. There was none of this deregulation. So it was assumed that if a public utility was going to invest money in a power line that the ratepayers were going to pay for, it had to be for the public good. Well, that's no longer the case with these brand new entities that are being allowed to bring power down from Canada. This, by the way, they've got a great name for this. It's called a participant-funded transmission line. It's a fancy way of saying we're going to pay for it, and we're going to use it.
Just can I ask you a quick question just in the midst of all that you're talking about right now? One of the things that they're calling this is not a new project because it's basically going through existing rights of way throughout the bulk of the state. Just because it's 45 miles up north doesn't make it a new transmission line right away. So they're calling it an elective upgrade, which means they don't have to go through as much as of the beginning permitting and process that you would need to go through if it was a brand new line, correct?
I would say wrong.
Okay. I mean,
they've got to build 45 miles of new right-of-way through the North Country.
Right.
They've got to build more if they go alternative routes, and we don't know which routes they're taking. They've got to build new right-of-way to the east of Concord if the FAA Concord, if the FAA says you can't build those towers next to the airport.
But if the ISO considers it, even with all of this proposal, considers it an elective upgrade, they're sort of going through a little bit faster than the norm.
I disagree. I don't think this... Look, this is the biggest transmission power line project that's ever been proposed for this state. It's going from stem to stern, north to south. It's going to hit every community on the west side of the state and then down through the center of the state. We've got people who are getting upset in Hanover now and in Lebanon. I mean, they woke up last week. Wait until they start right. Okay? Now, they're... The utilities would love it if we fought against each other. The folks over there don't want the alternate line, stick it down the, you know, down through Franconia. We're not going to do that. I have one option for this power line. I will concede one option. It's called the no build option.
Right.
And that's it. Just a couple more comments on the process that we're going to have to go through. If the state will look at the old law that they have for eminent domain for public utilities and recognize how the world has changed with respect to the competitive private enterprises that are out there today, I'm sure that good thinking, rational legislators like the one that spoke to you just a little bit ago will see that there is a need to re-examine these statutes and find ways to make it harder for the utility company to take our rights away and make it easier for us to preserve our rights as set forth in the Constitution of the state. So you need to write, you need to ask, you need to tell them how you feel. Who are the people that, I don't know, I assume most of you are from up here, who are the people that you really need to let them know how you feel, not with form letters, but with personal letters? Please, please, please write to Senator Gallas. He doesn't really understand how strongly we feel. He needs to get the message. It can be polite. It can be for your own reasons. It can be your own rationale. But please write to Senator Gallas. He's going to be very important for us to communicate with and to let him know how we feel. Governor Lynch, please write the governor. He's got staff that is tuned in on this. He's assigned a special person to deal with the Northern Pass. He will be talking to groups. I know he was originally in favor of this. He got sold a bill of goods. He got sold on the wonderful jobs that this would bring into Franklin. Well, you know what? The permanent jobs in Franklin will be about 5.
How about Burton? Ray Burton?
Ray has come out against the pass. Thank him. He needs to hear from you. Thank him.
Other newly elected state representatives here tonight?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Okay. That was. Please write. Well, then, write him and thank him, too. So, I just want to do one more thing, and then I'm getting right to you. And it has to do with you. Signs. Okay? We need to have a contest. Folk art, signs on Route 3. It's not for our benefit and enjoyment, it's for the benefit and understanding of the visitors that will be piling in to do things in connection with this project. The DOE has got to send a team up here to do some scoping hearings. I heard Edith say they were coming in March. I'm not sure about that. The DOE can be a little slow. We'll see. But when they come, I don't want them to just be stuck reading three signs. I want them to see 300.
Nobody said anything yet tonight about money. We need money. We have a fund set up called the
Powerline
Education Fund, and it is set up with PayPal, so that you can go online to the Powerline Education Fund, and you can make donations. We're investigating getting balloons, large balloons that would say "No Northern Pass" on them. That on certain days we send out a message by email, preferably when the wind isn't blowing, and there'll be a 135-foot tether on it, and we're going to ask you to put them up if you're anywhere near the power line. Put them up in the air.
I hope they're orange.
We'll make them orange. I think it should be orange. We have somebody a couple of days ago donated the use of a motorhome that we're going to put signage on. And we're going to get that motorhome to go around to various meetings and show up down in Concord, and when we're hopefully going to have a march on Concord at some point, probably when the weather's a little bit better. And, so it's going to be really important for us to have all of your emails and telephone numbers and contact information. And that information.
March on PSNH.
We'll stop by there too. In fact, we'll park the van in their parking lot right by their front door. Val, who best should they email to with their email information? Bury the Northern Pass?
Well, you can go on the www.livefreeorfry.org website, and you can get on to our email distribution list through that. Or you can just, if you want to write this down, the email distribution list is info.northcountrypowerline@gmail.com.
Okay. It's on the bottom of this.
Yeah, it's on all the material, so you have to.
All right.
Yep.
We need to be able to communicate with you.
Right.
And we need to have your energy. Because believe me, down south the energy is nowhere near like what I'm seeing here tonight. I'm thrilled by what I see. So, thank you.
I got one here, and then we'll get back. Yep.
You know what? You keep talking about writing to our elected officials and so forth. Obviously, they don't know how to read a newspaper, from what I've gathered, thanks to Donna Jordan and her husband, and you name it. I mean, the papers are posted with this stuff. That isn't a clear enough message to our elected officials. It is that important to write.
Look, the local elected officials get the Colbert Chronicle. They get the other local papers. The folks in Concord don't get them. They don't read them. They read the union leader, they get the union leader, they get the Concord Monitor, they get the Boston Globe.
Can I say
Telegraph.
You're correct. When we heard that Ray Burton came out against this, we put a five-column headline on the top of our paper, and next week when he delivers what he just said to me he's going to do, a letter to the editor condemning this, that's going on the front page.
Yeah, that's good.
Those are the two politicians that we've heard from, the two.
That's good.
I promised the gentleman behind, and then we'll come back. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you let them go on your property and one of their employees gets injured, isn't he covered by workers' comp?
Well, let's talk about that for a minute.
The question is, in New Hampshire, we let the snowmobile trails cross our property and replace different shrubs. And the state says we're not responsible.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Who are they employed by? The agreement doesn't tell you that. It says our agents and contractors. If they're third-party contractors, Northern Pass doesn't have to have workers' comp for them. Whoever employs them should have workers' comp. But do they? How do you know? Right. Good point.
Now, if you hire a lawyer, do you recommend hiring a lawyer, say, in Concord that has good political connections, or should you get together with 100 people and do a class action suit for money all together?
Well, I'm going to the New Hampshire Bar Association meeting next Friday, and I'm going to start to ask around on who is going to be available for this. We've got all kinds of legal needs up here. We've got wealthy landowners, and we've got landowners that really can't afford a Concord lawyer. Who's going to do this work? We've got to find lawyers up and down the state to help this out. And if we can, I'd like to get a roster, and I'm going to talk to the Bar Association about that. I don't know if they'll get too excited about fighting PS&H.
Aren't you better off with somebody in Concord that's been doing business with the government and public service for years and knows everybody?
I would say yes, sir, if your issue is complicated and involves knowing what's going on in Concord. If it's just about damages to your property, you can probably do fine with a local lawyer. The law offices of Waystack and King helped out some landowners here with the pipeline. They went to court.
Now, if you got them to buy all your property, including the house...
I said Waystack and King. That's the old firm. Waystack and Frizzell.
You got them to buy your property and the house, and you got what it's worth because they devalued it. Once they get it, wouldn't they turn around and sell it at a reduced rate and you could buy it back?
Look, anything's possible. Anything's possible. But would I count on it? No. I wouldn't count on it.
Now, are you better off getting together with, say, 100 people and hiring a lawyer, or are you better off on your own?
That will obviously depend on whether or not you can find 100 people that want it to happen exactly the way you do. You're better off talking to a lawyer initially on your own. Tell the lawyer what you want in a confidential communication, and let the lawyer work to achieve your goals. If you want to join with other people because the lawyer will be less expensive, which would be true, that lawyer's going to have to be satisfied that there's no conflict of interest and that he or she can represent the group without running into a likelihood of having conflicts down the road that dissolve the legal relationship and leave you high and dry in a place that's worse off than when you started. I've taken it. Actually, I haven't. I took the ethics exam. I'm ethical. They tell me I'm ethical. I waved in to New Hampshire last December. I've been a New Hampshire lawyer for exactly 13 months.
Okay. You mentioned eminent domain. Before they take your property by eminent domain, do they not offer you a fair market value for your property before eminent domain?
I'll answer your question with a yes and a no. Yes, they'll make you an offer. Will it be fair market value? I don't think so.
Next question. So say they're going to go through 100 properties, okay? And 95 of those properties say no. Can they take 95 properties by eminent domain?
They can, but they won't like it. They will be miserable if 95 out of 100 property owners say no. Because why? Because the budget, instead of being $1.1 billion, will be $1.1 billion plus the legal costs of doing it, the cost of the uncertainty of the outcome, and the cost of the delay.
And the bad will.
So in other words, if all the people united and did not give in,
bingo.
Bingo. So it's the people, everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people have a price. So some of these people are going to give in. And once the dominoes start to fall, some people are going to give in.
Well,
so that means the eminent domain process is going to, is it 50%?
Yep.
75%?
Let me answer it this way. The more people that resist, the more impact you will have on the ability to kill or alter the project. However, it only takes one property owner in a crucial spot to stop them dead until they solve that problem. So don't forget the power of one, but recognize that the power of 100 is 100 times greater than one, but one may be enough.
So this process could take 5 or 10 years.
That's right. There's a power line out in the west in Montana where one property owner stopped it. Now, the public utility company out there, which is a Canadian company, by the way, is trying to change the law. It's in Montana. So that property owner's court victory will be nullified. So they don't necessarily give up. And they're smart, and they're shrewd, and they'll fight tooth and nail to get this thing done because there's 12.5% return on millions and millions of dollars in it for them. Yes, in the back.
I'm just curious if there is any deterrent by either having conservation protection or current use.
Well, there certainly is protection by having conservation easements. Is it 100% bulletproof? No. But the
you gotta make them stumble. I mean, even current use, I think most people don't.
Well, current use won't cause them a hiccup. That there's a statute that says current use won't be affected by this. Okay? And current use, of course, we all know that the values are low to begin with. That doesn't mean that you can't sell current use for more than what it's valued at on the town under the current use statute. But current use is kind of irrelevant. If you have an easement, there may be a big difference between a federal program such as is run for the grasslands by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and an easement that's owned by a private trust, an environmental trust, that's a charitable organization. Because the power of eminent domain would still apply to that private owner of the easement. But that holder of the easement knows why you gave them a conservation easement, and they're going to fight for you. And all of the organizations that I've talked to, including the ones that we've enumerated, the Forest Society, the Amanusic Trust, they'll all fight. They're not gonna like this. And they have to get both the landowner and the holder of the conservation easement to agree. By the way, these right of entry agreements may violate the conservation easement. So read your easement deeds if you have them. Because you don't even have to be the bad guy then. You can tell the utility company when they come to have you sign the right of entry agreement, gee, part of my land's in conservation. You'll have to go talk to them.
I don't know if there's anything that we push with current use because most people who put it into current use are just doing what the conservation packages are, whether it's private level.
Well, yes. And
sitting on hundreds of acres to be
kingdom. The bottom line of the private, current use in New Hampshire is it was enacted as a policy of the state to encourage the maintenance of open space and forests, and it's done that, but it's generated a lot of issues as well, but it's done that. But the power line can go through it, whether it's current use or not. It's not going to stop them.
While you're on the easement, I looked at the easement deed for the Central Lake Headwaters,
yep.
Which is the Trust for Public Lands and the Nature Conservancy, which owns Buttle Mountain, Columbia. They all have what's called a condemnation clause, which is a very short and sweet clause that says if a public utility wants to go to condemn the property or have a right of way, they can. And this is how the money will be divided. So you want to make sure if you've got an easement, like you said, to read what you have, because you might have to be falling back on whoever owns that easement. They're the ones that are going to get the money, not you.
Yeah. The easements don't say they can do it. The easements say in the event they do it, this is how we divide the money. It doesn't mean that both the owner and the easement holder don't have the right to fight it. And what we understand will happen is that the easement holders, the Nature Conservancy, the Forest Society, the Ammonoosuc Trust, they'll fight.
Okay.